Jen, you're so weird.
What? Why am I weird? What did I do?
You're so incredibly weird.
How so? Okay, come on. Detail for us. I mean, why
the audience,
I'm weird.
No, the audience will never know. But, you know, I just got to say, the stuff you've cut out of this podcast, especially the introduction, you're just so strange.
You mean all the things that you
Wasn't
said?
Wasn't it me who was weird?
Well, he was complimenting. Isn't it me who's he was weird? Complimenting how succulent your voice is, which I do
well,
find.
Well, I don't
just
remember using the word succulent. I remember using
no,
silky smooth, yeah. But not succulent.
That's true.
It's only because he heard me say, "Welcome to Played It Once, a podcast about games you've only played once." The reality is that most board games only make it to the table one time, and that first impressions matter. So we made a podcast about ours. I'm your host Jesse Anderson, and with me is the himself, Jen Vegas.
No adjectives. You see that, Jan? You see that? He agrees you're weird. He avoided using any descriptive terms for you, which I actually admire.
Am I supposed to use my name there?
Yeah.
You could have used any name you felt was appropriate. Jan, could you introduce yourself and what you do? Because anyone that's listening to this should realize that you're way more qualified and professional.
Oh, my God. Steven, before you go, can I just give you a virtual high five from across the internet, man?
You got it.
Job well done, sir. Job well done. My God.
Thank you. Well, to answer you there, my name's Steven Woolley. I work for Team Covenant, also known as Covenant. We're kind of working on that. Covenant.com wasn't available when we incorporated in like 14 years ago. So we became Team Covenant. And
what a travesty.
And we've been trying to buy the domain from them ever since. It's a little technology firm out of Austin. And they just...
Have you successfully done it?
They won't give it up. Not yet. We'll get them.
Should we all send very angry emails?
Or we can just quack at them into submission.
How many ducks would it take?
I honestly feel like these are the kinds of people that would dig their heels in more if they knew that we wanted it.
I think you're right.
So,
but just so you know, we have successfully buried other channels in about 6,000 quacks before. And so if push comes to shove, you listen to me. If push comes to shove, we're willing, you know, a flock flies together.
So you're willing to put the duck army on alert for us or however
it is?
Oh,
yes, sir. You just say the word.
You know, Jan, could you introduce what Team Covenant does.
Well,
because no one wants to brag about themselves. He's so impressive.
Well, okay, so Team Covenant, or Covenant, you know what? Let's call them by the name that they deserve to have. Covenant.
That's fair.
It's such an interesting hybrid of a store / community builder / web store as well. Basically, they've innovated of what brick and mortar stores should be. Covenant has developed a really interesting fan base across, it's 12 years at this point, where you have adopted different franchises and just built around and established the foundations for each one of those communities to have a hub, to have a home to call to and to go to play their games. And as you've been building that, you've also established incredible streaming services that happen very often. You've established an online presence through which I don't think I've ever heard this before, a subscription-based service on any type of game that has recurring updates or expansions coming out. Like, for example, the Marvel Champions, the game we're talking about today, SkyTear, Ashes Reborn, Pokemon the Card Game, even Wingspan. You choose a title and you go ham over, you know, you go hardcore on that title.
It's such an interesting model. And I'm going to be honest, I know a lot more about your streaming services and the community you've built online through podcasting and streaming than I do for, you know, your retail and your subscription-based service. But what I'm familiar with is a constant influx and dedication to core fan bases and core communities. I mean, if people are looking for, and I'll have you list off a few of the games that you've covered that you've really built communities around, but if people are looking to connect, have reoccurring content, and really dive deep into a fan base, I don't know of a lot of other communities that are doing it on such a broad scale as you. I know of a few, you know, Space Cats and Peace Turtles what's that game they cover, Jen?
Oh, that little game by the name of Twilight Imperium, that one.
That one, yes, yes, yes. Like, they dig into that. I know some groups that do villainous and stuff, but very few have done the breadth of content that you all produce. So what are some of the titles that you really have core communities built
around?
Just
generally, thank you so much for saying that. That was a great intro to what we do. So that's really just, it means a lot for me to hear that. So, communities, honestly, to get kind of the full understanding of how this all came to be, you know, when Fantasy Flight Games first announced their living card game model way back with Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings, those LCGs, we were coming off of like collectible card games and expandable games, a game called Monsterpocalypse, mm-hmm. that was a miniatures-based game from Privateer Press. And we thought these games were great. You know, it's like you can play your expandable games, but you don't have to chase cards. You don't have to buy a bunch of booster packs, those kinds of things. So we started playing LCGs, and the LCG community, I think, as a whole, people who were interested in that genre, was really where the community building in kind of our modern era became most prevalent. So,
for
you
sure.
know, so then it was Game of Thrones LCG, then it was Netrunner, you know, then it was the Star Wars LCG, Marvel Champions, Arkham Horror. So a lot of that Fantasy Flight, you know, the fan base there was along with us for a lot of those rides, those community development efforts. And the subscription model arose out of that too, because it very quickly was like, you know, we're playing the things that we're selling. We believe in the things that we're selling. So, you know, about the 15th pre-order you place for the next Marvel Champions pack, it's like,
you're kind of committed.
Can you just send me everything? Like, why do I have to every single month go find it again?
Why do I have to deal with it?
Right. So we started, and the way it started was just beautiful. You know, we started the only way we could, which was PayPal. Everybody had a $15 subscription, and if a pack didn't come out that month, which was very common in the early FFG days, we just had to keep a spreadsheet, and we would refund anybody who hadn't paid up, and then we'd keep everybody paid up, and it could be months and months, and then a pack would come out, and then they'd clear, and then we'd send the pack, and then it'd start. So we did that for a while, and then we developed our...
That sounds like fun.
It was something. He looks at it with...
I love spreadsheets.
With dark eyes.
Oh, they're just... Jan can testify to it. I love spreadsheets so much, I've never used Excel. Yeah.
It was just so difficult for everybody involved. So then we invested money and developed an internal system on our website that would create that experience in a much easier way, where we could control whenever those charges came through. So we wouldn't have to charge and then refund and charge and then refund. We've been working on that for the past 8 years. I mean, that's been so much of our digital effort, has been streamlining that service, making it easy to change quantities, to get emails, you know, to know when things are coming out, upcoming fields on the subscriptions. And then we added, you know, games along the way that were also expandable, right? So like Pokemon trading card games, good example. Wingspan worked with Jamie, you know, to lock down supply on Wingspan expansions. He was really into the idea, so we launched that one. And
It's such a cool model for not only the larger groups, because, I mean, I'm sure Pokemon isn't paying attention. They're going to sell everything no matter what. But someone like Jamie with Wingspan or SkyTerra, which is what we were talking about today, that are designing things that know they're going to have reoccurring content coming out for, to work with you, to partner with you and know, well, Team Covenant has this amount of people that are already locked in. We know we're selling this packet or this pocket of games. It's such a cool model to approach, because it provides a security for you all, a security for the client base, and on the other end of it, a security for some of these smaller indie publishers who are doing their best to build this type of community.
So if you're curious to find out more about the future of brick and mortar stores,
Do we have to quit talking about it, Jan?
Be sure to either subscribe to Team Covenant on YouTube, listen to their podcast,
reasonable thing to do?
Or
that's fair as well.
If for some miracle you live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you have not visited their store, I'm going to give you their address right now, so you better write it down and get your butt over there.
When the world opens.
Of course, when the world opens. 7149 S. Yell Avenue, Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you're not going to be there,
sure,
I'm going to make it there at some point.
Are you sure that's not his personal address?
Here's the important thing.
Hey, if,
here's the important thing to know about that is that that is our address, but we're only doing like local pickup right now because whenever COVID hit, we realized that this was going to be a long haul. Our lease was already up on our old store. Literally in that July, the lease was up. And we had to decide, are we going to renew for the next 5 years or not? So at that moment, we said, we're paying a ton of money for retail space that we cannot even use. So we moved to the address you just listed, which is a little office space here in Tulsa, where we still do in-store pickup. And then we have begun looking at real estate for the next iteration of the store, which is launching, God bless, in 2021.
Once the world opens, I'll make this commitment right here.
Oh, you don't even have to finish it. Opens, I'm there.
Listen. All right. Team Covenant, hear me out. I love telling stories. I love documentary filmmaking. It was my career before getting into this board game space to some degree. And so when the world opens and you're ready to launch version 3, you know, the expansion of this store project you're doing, Jen and I will drive out. We'll visit.
I'll be there.
And we'll tell a story. We'll feature some stuff. All that being said, this podcast is Played It Once, a podcast, if you've forgotten, about a game that we've only played once, which is reassuring because I'd be intimidated if they'd played this game more than once. I do have a question for you, Steven. How are you able to talk about this game when the entire premise of your brand is playing a game multiple times, streaming so many different versions and variations of it, talking about the expansion content, showing it off repeatedly? I'm very surprised that you were committed to only playing this game once before coming on the show.
It sounds a little bit irresponsible, honestly, too. You know, having an entire subscription-based model, promoting a game, and only playing it once. That's, I don't know, it's kind of daft. I don't know.
Well, it's an interpretation on a theme here of the podcast, in that I have played it in various ways multiple times, but I distinctly remember the first time I played it. And that's what I'll be discussing
today. Fair.
Oh, hey.
Fair. Interesting.
That's totally valid. Hey, Jesse, we should have come up with that first.
I mean, you guys pitched it to me, so I just said yes. You know, I didn't know the rules.
Well, listen, we've got high standards here. All that being said, SkyTerra really is one of those games that you and your community have latched onto. You've done a lot of streams. In fact, one of the core ways that I discovered the game and started initially playing it was through the media that you were creating. And so you're to blame for, you know, whatever my opinions are of this game, which
good
I'll spoil
job
right now.
Oh.
This game's good. This game's very
okay,
positive.
Well, there
I'm
we
spoiling
go.
Spoiling it ahead of the curve. Jan, could you give the audience a brief rundown of what this game is before we start into the depth
Me?
Of it?
Okay. So,
well, I knew Steven would put us to shame if I asked him, so I figured I'd ask the person that probably knows the least about this game to give us a, you know.
You picked well, my friend. You picked well. So SkyTerra is a competitive car-driven miniature game inspired by the MOBA video franchise. So what you're doing here is that you're putting two groups of heroes to fight against each other. And not just fight against each other, but try to take down different towers. And these towers are going to represent essentially your victory condition. There's three areas or three lanes that people go through, which is very typical of a MOBA-style video game. The idea is that you have small little minions that are going up two of those lanes, and then another lane that's usually dependent on where those heroes and where your characters are going to move up from. So in board game terms, what you're doing is this is almost like a skirmish game with very car-driven tactics in there, but without any dice rolls whatsoever. Everything is very planned out. There's a lot of tactics and strategies here. And what you're trying to do is that you're just you're pushing slowly but surely your side of the board to your opponents to try and overwhelm them as much as you can.
I mean, I like your variation of in board game terms. I think a tactics-driven skirmish game is really accurate here. You're going to have variable point conditions, and the core system is going to be based off of a variety of different, I believe there's maybe 24 available, someone could correct me on that number, but I'm going to say it confidently. I believe there are 24 various different characters that you can build your deck from. So not deck construction and not quite deck building. It's this mashup of three core systems that you're pulling together. Steven, could you correct everything we've gotten
yeah,
wrong?
Please. Just redo this entirely, I guess.
What are we missing when you highlight what this game
is? That was a really phenomenal intro to what the game is. So, you know, I grew up playing Dota.
He's lying.
I was playing Dota back in the Warcraft 3 Battle.net days. I don't know if you guys were in the space back then, but this is a computer game like thing. So the MOBA genre, it started with these old like Warcraft 3 games. You could get online. And they released the map editor of the game, Blizzard did, to the community. And then the community took the Warcraft assets and made games with them. And then they put those up on Battle.net, and you could download them and play whatever, you know, so-and-so had cooked up.
Seriously? Is that how it happened?
It's exactly
it. I never knew.
One of the people, like, you know, there's a bunch of them. Ice Frog was one of the main ones, developed this format where you took these Warcraft heroes, put them on a laned map, and then had creeps or minions spawn randomly, and they would run towards enemy towers, all assets in the Warcraft game. And then it became this subgenre. It became like this giant thing, and then they bought the rights, and then it became League of Legends, and then it became, you know, Heroes of the Storm, and it became all this thing. But it all started, yeah, in that old Battle.net days of Warcraft and StarCraft.
And Ice Frog, just to be clear, is a multimillionaire at this point, right? I'm assuming.
I honestly think that he couldn't copyright the stuff that he'd done because he was using all of their assets. So.
Yeah, usually the people that innovate are not necessarily the ones that make the biggest bank.
Oh, but my God.
That is a fascinating history to the genre, because the idea of a tabletop system inspiring something that became a massive digital, you know, utilization of that program. Now we just have to convince all those people that play the video games to come back to the tabletop world.
Yeah,
where'd you all go? You like what we're doing
and
here.
That, honestly, that's what SkyTerror is doing, is basically saying, like, hey, this is a great way. I mean, League of Legends and stuff, this is millions and millions of people. People watch this. This is esports, right? This is a huge deal.
And
I watch the esports. It's great.
Exactly, right? And so you're basically saying to a giant audience and also the tabletop audience, like, look at this genre, look at this tactics-driven system. It is of itself just an incredible way to play a game, to have this kind of tension between things constantly moving towards your opponent, and you're having to try to balance where you go and what do, and how do you support it. And somehow, and it's not, I've not seen this, somehow you can fit all of the words that we use in board gaming, miniatures, cards, tactics, boards, you know, the whole thing. It's a combination of all of it. And yet it works extremely well. And that's just when you hear the mashup, you're like, oh, this is going to be clunky and weird and tacked on, but it's beautiful. Yep.
So you mentioned that you specifically remember the first time you played this game, and you clearly have some degree of nostalgia for the genre, the type of game, you know, the history. When did you first come across SkyTerror? And I assume we're going to get to this, but what about it made you say, yeah, this is one we want to lean into. This is a community we want to help foster, because you didn't discover a pocket of existing community there. You, from the very beginning, it seems, have kind of been help leading the charge on building this genre or this space.
Yeah, so it was early February of 2020, of last year, so about a year ago from now.
Oh.
And, you know, I don't know, you guys probably are here as well. You might randomly get a box in the mail that's like, hey, would you review this on your channel, you know? But we had a thing come in, and you know, like many of the things, we didn't really...
Yeah, do you want any of those? Because I have a few I could probably just send you one.
We don't, expressly.
okay, great.
But SkyTerror showed up as one such box, and we kind of didn't pay much attention to it. And then one day, you know, we had decided we're going to be streaming a bunch. And kind of COVID was starting to move around, you know, and it was kind of in those times. And we were like, you know, SkyTerror, what's going on with this? And we cracked it open. And the really what struck me about it was, you've been through enough games in your life, you can see when the things are super cared about. When the box art is cared about, when the quality of the materials is cared about, when there's an art book that's been sent that's filled with lore about the universe that this game is in.
100%.
All the pieces are beautifully sculpted. They're in a nice, you know, clamshell. Everything, the map is like heavy cardstock and just gorgeous visuals on the front. And so it gets your attention, right? When it's like, there's somebody's really cared about this.
If someone invested so much in doing this right, there has to be something beneath the surface that's worth looking
right.
at.
Right. Presumably.
It might not be perfect.
Presumably.
But it's worth checking out.
Every part of it was cared about. So like, yeah, like you said, if the outside presentation is great, well, the mechanics are probably as cared about as well. So we played it the first time. I lost my mind because of how great it reminded me of the MOBA genre and how it actually regenerated the feeling of what to do, where to be, where to go. And also because I'm hugely into collectible card games and just card games in general. Zach and I both are that we grew up, you know, as kids playing that together. And we got hit with the deck building and the swapping cards in, and you balance your deck for these different variables, and that kind of took it off for us. I mean, that after that, it was just we couldn't stop thinking about it.
And that's actually a really interesting point that you brought up about SkyTear, because I didn't say this. This is considered by a lot of people the Magic the Gathering sort of like combination with a skirmish and tactics game. The way that the cards and the powers work here, there's mana that you're using to activate certain abilities. You have a deck of cards that, as Jesse said, you're mashing up based on the characters that you select. And through hand management, you're choosing when those cards activate. And the way that those powers function is very similar to the type of combo-driven and status-effect nature that something like Magic the Gathering has brought before, but in a completely new and innovative package.
And the game scales and ramps in a really responsible way from my read. I mean, the degree of resources that you have to use start growing from round to round, and so you feel like you're becoming more powerful. You get more access to the cards that you've been holding on to or cycling through your deck, and so it has this escalating feeling of, instead of just powering up your tableau or your board, you're actually physically just becoming more powerful as the game progresses on.
And that's the beautiful thing about the way that the mana is balanced too. So you have 1 mana, 2 mana, and 3 mana cards. And if you're the type of person that wants to include all the powerful 3 mana cards, you get really good on turn 3 and 4 and 5. But if you have 1s and 2s in your deck,
I'm so good on turn 5.
But you can play really early and you can play those big, like those small spells and be really good in the early game, but then your late game is not as good. So you have to balance that, and you can work out what kind of deck you want to play. And as such, with the faction that you've chosen, you can absolutely express what you want to do, and it's pretty much always good. Like, you can't really put cards together that just become useless. Which was a huge draw for me. It's like, yeah, I want to be fast and weird. And it's like, you can do that and still win the game. And that's a real big draw for me.
I haven't been fast and weird since high school. Just weird. All that being said, you mentioned that this immediately replicated that MOBA feeling. And I know for Jan and I, I'll speak for him. We both had that exact same interpretation. I don't know why, when I speak for you, you oftentimes disagree with me, but I'll go ahead and speak for you.
What a mystery.
When we played, we were actually actively searching for something that replicated a MOBA experience, and we tried out a few other games that claimed to be in that
Guards
genre.
Of Atlantis.
And SkyTear, I was going to mention names, but sure. SkyTear was the one that we came across that sung. Everything seemed to mash up. And we played an intro scenario with intro characters with standard, variable scoring on TTS. And still, immediately, something was just clicking here. So, from your interpretation, can you let the audience know what those main pinpoint areas are that translated MOBA into a tabletop setting so effectively? We've already touched on a few of them, but what others stand out?
Yeah, the main thing to me that defines a MOBA is you have to have towers, you have to have little things moving towards those towers, and you really have to be making the choice between, do I want to help my little things get further into the enemy base, or do I want to go over here and mess with one of these enemy heroes that's trying to do the same thing?
Yes.
So that tension between, and again, if I go too far into enemy territory, because I'm trying to push those creeps really far and support them as their leader, I'm now more exposed to enemy heroes coming in and messing with me. And so that to me is the fundamental MOBA you know, drama, which is how hard do you want to push your luck supporting your troops going into the enemy base, knowing that you're leaving your flank more open every time that you do.
And it's always a timing thing.
Yeah, it is. It is always a timing thing. And it's about, when are you going to push here? When are you going to push there? Do you recover over there? Do you patch this hole over here? Do you push the advantage here? And then throughout all of that, you're able to create this sensation of minions moving here and there and this drama and this escalation, but you do it all at once during like the cleanup phase every turn. So it's not like you're keeping track of all these tiny moving parts while the game's progressing, but like you take a snapshot, you play out a turn, and then you see how the minions resolve at the end of all of that action. And it feels like it's alive. Like it feels like you get to watch that happen in real time.
Wow, what a serenade, Steven. My God. We have to send this directly over to PvP Geeks, the designers and publishers of this game.
Mean, don't get too far ahead of yourself, because I am also going to ask him what he doesn't like about this game or what might make it not right for certain people.
Did you just hear him? He's obviously in love with this game. What are you saying?
I did, but before we get there, there's two other elements that I want to talk about or focus on. The first is going to be that super-powered creature that exists in the center of the board, that escalating tension. The other thing that scales in accordance with the mana is going to be this beast that you can unleash that people can manage, or it just wreaks havoc across the play space, which feels very appropriate to a living board. Not only are those minions moving, but something more powerful
lurks,
is moving and existing as well. And then along with that is going to be the variable victory conditions.
Yep.
The fact that it's not just about taking down those towers, but there's other ways that you can subvert or change or pressure luck in a way that might give you the advantage. But again, it's always that timing balance. When do you take a strike? And if you miss that moment, you're either too early or too late. You might have just handed your opponent the victory,
yeah,
assuming that you can't recoup or think on your feet as quickly as possible. So those two elements for me are things that I think are done really well and shine in the experience and the variability of this game.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how exactly it does it. Like, every time, and I am in love with this game, disclaimer. But
You're not supposed to tell people to the end.
But there's also a lot of things that I love that I can definitely tell you have a lot of faults.
All right. Well, we don't need to talk about me on the show.
About
that's
that,
not
PvP.
Appropriate.
I'm not afraid of that. No, I, you know exactly what you're talking about. There's something that feels so alive with it when you're playing it. And, you know, I think they made a lot of choices that get the rules out of the way when they need to be. And it's a choice that a lot of miniatures games don't make. And it's very problematic when they don't. So to me, easy example of this is you have a bunch of heroes on the board. Right. I start the game. I look at your team and it's like, OK, there's four things over there. I might not have seen them before. But what I know is that they all move the same. They all move three hexes. If they're all going to shoot something, it's going to be three hexes away. You know, if they're in cover, they're in cover. If there's line of sight, there's a white line. And if you can't see through it, you can't see through it. So, you know, when I come into most miniatures games, even skirmish games, that mono moves five, that mono moves two, that mono moves three, but also has this special ability where it moves one after it moves the first time. None of that is there. And so I can very easily kind of comprehend what everything is capable of doing on the board without having to memorize my opponent's cards and miniatures. And I think that's a really important aspect of why this game is able to capture the action without getting bogged down.
Yeah. And the cool thing about that is that they're not just, it's not just about that movement. There is variability in each one of these characters based on the type of cards that they can play. All the cards that you're putting into your deck correspond to particular pools of magic or of power nature. And each one of the heroes either is 100% fire, or it could be fire and wind, or it could be water and wind. And there's a lot of interconnection there. And not just that, on top of that, Every hero also has a special ability that they can activate. They also have a particular action that their faction can enable them to do, and a subsection of another ability inside of that. And they also have an ultimate power that they can unleash at some point in the game. So yeah, the game board is pretty equal in terms of those mechanics. But when you start delving into each one of those characters, that depth is definitely there as well.
I mean, powers and abilities, you know, upgrading
the mechanics.
Sounds
like this is Alex's game, right?
Randolph would love this game. That being said, I feel like we've spent 20 minutes complimenting this and 5 minutes complimenting you and the work that you do.
I haven't even started on either, actually.
Well, let's start dipping into what might not make this game right for certain audiences. If you had pinpoints or issues that you found after one play. Remember, this is still, we've only have one
play. Of course, only one single play.
So
yeah, of course.
Opinions could be wrong, but what do you think might be a barrier to entry or might make this game not quite right for certain individuals?
So I think the first most notable thing is that the timing of the way that cards resolve and
the stack,
some of the intricacies about what can go where, like a hero can be on a token, but a token can't be on a token. And there's in the middle of the board, there's the dome and it is a printed token, but it acts like a token. What's the difference between within and adjacent? And, you know, like I think next to it, there's a bunch of different terms in the game that you kind of have to learn. How does targeting work? Like targeting is really important. To target something, you have to be able to see it. But whenever you're about to resolve something that has targeted something, if that thing can no longer be targeted, it fizzles. So like there are moments in the game where you can get lost in how things are supposed to resolve. And that's when, you know, if you don't have the patience to work through that, or you're not looking for the mastery of the game, that those things can be very kind of blocking. You know, they can really get in the way of your enjoyment of the experience. And unfortunately, a lot of that comes from the fact that these are two just awesome Italian brothers who made this game, took it to Kickstarter, and all of this stuff has been translated from Italian to English and you know, trying to get that terminology right. And so there's some erratas and there's some, you know, this card should technically say this and this should have been like that. But at this point, like all of those are captured and they're on the website and they do an incredible job of their website. But it can get in the way early. So, you know, I think we've all been playing games with somebody and we want them to be excited about it. And this use case comes up and they say, well, why can't I target you here? It's two hexes away. And then it's like the whole thing kind of starts to collapse and you have that nervousness of like, oh no, like they're getting lost in the weeds. See, yep. Here.
I just tell them that they can. I'm just like, ah, do it.
Yeah. And that's perfectly reasonable.
We'll fix it next time.
Perfectly reasonable.
Yes, even 100%. I think the conversation around mastery in this one is actually really acute to this particular game. And the reason why I say that is, as we said, this is a skirmish and tactics game, which means that this is a perfect information game, which means that experience will always trump anything else.
We compared it to Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the other player's deck and knowing how to counter it, knowing how to sequence, knowing what might come out, all of that's relevant here, which is
exactly
great for some people, not always perfect for a lot of people.
So in the situation of, like, for example, this podcast, where a game only gets played once, or that your friends get to experience a game once, you being the owner of SkyTear, there could be the situation where you continue gaining experience, and every time that the next friend comes over, you're slightly destroying them more and more, right? So that is a really interesting aspect about this game, because obviously it's based around the MOBA franchise, and MOBAs are all about getting precision and understanding absolutely every intricacy about all the characters that are there so that you can counter them and do better. So I don't know if that is necessarily a slight against SkyTear at all. It is more of a caveat for people that are that are excited about this game. And let me tell you, there's a lot to be excited about this game. Just know that if you do want to play with somebody consistently, try to bring them on board with you on that journey.
All right, Jen. I know you struggled to find a critique.
I did 100% struggle. I'll be quite honest.
Jan's been waiting for me to give him the floor for a little while, so let's do it. Jan, opinion time.
Ooh.
Lay it out. What do you think of this game? If you like it, why do you like it? If you're keeping it, playing it again, doing whatever you're doing with it, let us know, my friend.
So,
oh God, there's a notepad.
I'm showing the camera all my notes.
Never
on this
mind.
Game. But
Jan,
will...
it has been lovely to hear all of your opinions.
I'm super excited to have this
conversation with you. Steven, same question.
It's too late.
I'd love to
it's
hear your
late.
Thoughts around. Oh, God,
it's too
I've
late.
The door.
So let's get into this a little bit, and I will try to be as
let's
quick fire
it.
As I can, because honestly, all
I'm
I want to do is
excited.
Just hear more Steven. But I digress.
Oh, this is going to be great.
First of all, I think that Sky Tier is doing something really interesting with the idea of casual play and also tournament play. And not just that they're saying, oh, there's tournament play in this. No. They're creating an ecosystem around tournament play. They are updating the rulebook consistently. They are keeping the entire franchise of this game active and looking for more content. Just like a normal MOBA, they are adding characters, they are adding maps, they are always looking how to improve. So for people that like what we're talking about and that think that this could be interesting for them, this is going to be a game that is going to grow with you, and then it's going to evolve as you move toward you move forward. And I think that the level of support that they have given to that concept is really something to look at and to admire, because it's not easy to do that in our board game space. After that, I would
point
say that
number two,
I would say that the push and pull that this game that Steven already so eloquently described is so palpable and enjoyable. The minions actually feel like they're alive, but at the same time, you're not worrying about it. It's all automatic. It just happens by itself, but it feels dynamic and like you never truly know what's going to happen. The number one thing about this game and the way that it functions.
Point number three.
Jesse, thank you so much. I felt that people were losing their way a little bit, but that counting down definitely helps a lot.
I've got them.
It's all about the cards in this game.
Number four.
No. This is still point number three. Jesse, come on. I thought you were
better
than this.
Point number three was commenting on my counting. Point number four is now whatever
well,
you're
that's
talking
a, that,
about.
That's okay. That you're stretching it there a little bit. But the cards in this game are so
point
interesting.
Number five.
The way that every character brings in something new to that deck, and not just that they're bringing something new to the deck, they're also bringing in new ways that other characters can function and behave on the board, is simply just exciting from a mechanical standpoint. You could be using a character the entire way for three games, and you suddenly decide, hey, you know what? Today, I'm going to mix in wind. And you suddenly get new synergies that you've never seen before. That is another really cool aspect about Sky Tier. And again, what makes it so enjoyable is just that it's so accessible and so simple as to how it approaches that conceit. It's absolutely fascinating. I really like the combat as well. No dice whatsoever. I am so absolutely tired of deterministic dice rolling in skirmish games. You're not going to see it here. The way that it works is that every character has a default amount of power or attack value. Depending on the type of action that you do, you either use that attack value or you don't use that attack value. And then you flip cards from your deck. You are constructing your deck. You know what's in there. You know the probability of certain numbers popping up in certain times, depending on your hand and what's in your discard. So you probably know if you're going to succeed at a fight. Oh my God, it's so cool. And the worship is awesome. I am a huge fan of this game. Steven, I'm right there with you, buddy. It's absolutely incredible.
Come on over to the Discord. You know, we got a new fan. I think we got a new player here in the podcast.
So all that being said from Jan, which I heard all of.
Oh,
clearly.
Sure. I think you were more focused on the counting, Jesse.
I got very accurate with the counting. Steven, What are your final impressions? You know, first impressions, final thoughts. What has struck you? And we'll drop the veil for the audience. You've played this game more than once, which is sacrilegious, but we won't hold you to the fire. What about this game, through the experience that you've had, the multiple plays, re-dipping into and building a community around it, being engaged in the tournament scene, what about this game has adapted and grown from that first play experience to where you are now? And what do you still like about it?
Yeah, so it's one of those games that there's an unfolding process. It's as you go to the next layer and then you find out, oh, there's a next layer and oh, there's another layer. And then you look back at how you were thinking about the game.
It's like an ogre.
Yeah, an ogre or an onion. Also, this is Pablo Neruda. There's this Pablo Neruda poem called The Onion, and it has stuck with me forever. And I just thought I'd let you know that. But there's,
do you have it?
I don't. All I remember is that at the end, it's an ode to an onion. And at the end, it says, and the performance was essentially so beautiful that everybody wept. Just like, isn't that great? It's just beautiful. But no, so layer after layer after layer. And then you look back and you realize that you've been on a journey for 2 months. And the way you were playing when you started is completely ridiculous. And so it onboards you into that experience. It scaffolds you into that experience. And what I like about it is I feel like I can always, I'm still tweaking cards. I'm still moving heroes around. I'm still introducing new concepts, testing it, trying to see if this works or that works. And like you were saying that you flip cards to determine your modifiers. Well, the most powerful cards have the worst modifiers.
Yep.
And the weakest cards have the strongest modifier. So do I want consistency on my flips or do I want powerful effects in my deck? The balance is so tight. The amount of care and just caretaking that PvP Geeks is doing for this game is unlike any publisher that I've ever seen. I mean, we've been working with FFG. We're working with Ashes, with Plaid Hat Games. Mm-hmm. Tons of expandable publishers, Flesh and Blood, wonderful support there, but nobody's doing it like PvP Geeks. I mean, they launched a game right when a pandemic hit, and they had to immediately develop a tabletop simulator app, launch a Discord, build a community around it, launch online tournament series, you know, try to figure out how to launch products to people that probably can't gather together physically and play them. It's been insane what they've been able to do. And so knowing that you're on the journey with publishers that actually care about the experience that you're having day to day is a really powerful feeling, and it comes through in every aspect of the game. And so, you know, there's a lot of different things. It's worth noting that you can paint the models, right? That you've got your models that need to be painted, need to be. They can be prime gray like most of mine. but if you like that, you can paint your models, you know. And hot tip, don't know if you guys know this, but they are actually working on a standalone solo / co-op game that is set in the Skytear universe, uses the same models. So you can take you can take those heroes that you lovingly painted for the PvP game, take them into a solo experience, and then play by yourself or play with friends on that. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, a publisher that really cares, they really support their players. It's a game that has seemingly infinite, you know, variability, tons of deck building options and ways to express yourself as a player, tons of layers of strategy that you discover over months and months and months, and new content that comes about once a quarter. So, you know, all those things combined, if you're looking for something to really have as your game, Skytear to me is one of the best.
So all that being said, we do have one question that we always make sure to ask, probably the most important question of the show. Did you enjoy it? And would you play it again?
And Jesse, how about you answer? You haven't even spoken the entire
episode, man. Great point.
I've been enjoying the conversation, though, because you all have been hitting on a lot of the points that I brought up some elements that I wanted to highlight that have really enhanced my game experience.
Like the monster in the center, the alternate victory conditions.
The monster in the center, the way that the board kind of ebbs and flow, the escalating of power as the game progresses on, and sort of if you've been able to keep each other balanced, you may find that you're falling a little bit behind as someone else's deck starts unlocking and scaling their abilities. There's a lot in this game to love. And really, genuinely, I haven't disagreed with anything that you all have said, from the criticisms that you had around accessibility or the depth of knowledge that you get as you play the game, to the idea and salutations to the publisher and the way they have, born and invested in this community, right? Especially during a season that has been very hard for a publisher that's creating a type of content that really incentivizes in-person competition play. everything across the board has been right. I really like this game. If I was going to recommend a MOBA game out of the ones that I have played so far, this is the one that comes to mind. I would like to get the expansions at some point. I would like to be in an environment where I can play this more and more often. And when Jan and I finally live together in blissful harmony, we will likely be bringing, you know, some more head-to-head, you know, combat onto this. Maybe we'll buy like Pickled's Pig's Feet and the loser has to eat it or something along
those
lines.
Oh no, you usually win games. That's not fair.
I do normally win games. But yeah, I mean, the question of the evening, right? Did you enjoy it? And would you play it again? I think for all of us, but I'll only speak for Jan on this.
For yourself, you
mean? For Jan and I, the answer is yes and yes. We both enjoyed that initial play and enjoyed it so much that we were hungry for and excited to keep diving into this game. I don't believe either of us get it to the table as much as we would like. It is hard right now with the cyclical nature of the content we're producing and the lack of a consistent game group to do so. But for anyone that's looking for an online board game community around a MOBA genre, or just something that is sort of invested in and innovating on this style of game, I see no reason why I wouldn't heavily recommend they get involved with the SkyTerra community.
And let's make a deal.
So
right now, you said you want to play the game more. You said
I love deals.
And there's nothing, this game on Tabletop Simulator is good. Some would say it is
great.
It's great. The game in person,
it's one of the better ones on TTS.
It blows it out of the water in person. You're staring at these beautiful models.
Absolutely.
You get to hold everything as they move across the board. Absolutely great. So let's make a deal. Whenever we open that store, 3.0.
Okay.
Oh my God. Come on, oh my God,
come
so excited.
In. Come on in. We'll do a 2v2.
Okay.
Little SkyTerra matchup. Maybe me with one of you, Zach with one of you, and we can kind of talk through the rules, you know, and keep everything moving and have a great time.
Yes!
Opposing team brings what the losers have to eat. So we bring your punishment, you bring our punishment.
All right, that sounds good. You know we play the game like constantly,
oh,
right?
I'm so excited.
Oh.
I hear you.
I'm training from this point onwards, man.
Here's the thing. Don't underestimate the power of the ducks. Have you ever met a Canadian goose? They are vicious.
Honk.
The reason why Canadians are so nice is because they put all their spite in those birds and send them down south. I'm telling you,
that's
you don't know what you've just signed up for. If there's anything Quackalope can stand behind, it's a challenge that makes someone else eat something disgusting.
All right,
oh,
well, you're
man,
on.
I'm so pumped. Ooh, yes.
This is, I mean,
I can feel the fire.
I can feel the confidence in your voice that this is a serious commitment, but you have no idea how committed I am to things like this.
This is the greatest crossover in tabletop history. Covenant v. Quack.
It might be.
It's a mighty duck story. We made to happen, really.
You still haven't. We'll have to do training montages. Honestly,
oh
leading
my
up
God.
To this thing, this could be the show of the century. All that being said, I still do need you to answer the questions. Did you enjoy it, and would you play it again?
When I first played this game, I enjoyed it to a degree that was surprising, and I have since played it again countless times. So not only would I, but I had no choice but to continue playing because I really did fall in love with it. I fell in love with it completely.
That's awesome. And all that being said, I do have one final thing I want to say.
Oh.
Onion, luminous flask, your beauty formed petal by petal, crystal scales expand you, and in the secrecy of the dark earth, your belly grew round with dew. Under the earth, the miracle happened, and when your clumsy green stem appeared, and your leaves were born, like swords in the garden, and the earth heaped up her power, showing your naked transparency, and as the remote sea, in lifting the breast of Aphrodite, duplicating the magnolia, so did the earth make you, onion, clear as a planet, and destined to shine, constant constellation, round rows of water upon the table of the poor. You make us cry without hurting us. I have praised everything that exists, but to me, Onion, you are more beautiful than a bird, of dazzling feathers, heavenly globe, plantanium goblet, unmoving dance of the snowy enemy, and the fragrance of the earth lives in your crystalline nature.
Wow.
That's Sky Tear.
This latest failed attempt at bringing you quality entertainment was brought to you by the Quackalope Podcast. We love to hear from you, so don't forget to leave a review and subscribe. If you'd like to connect with us, follow us on any of our social channels or visit our website. But regardless of what you do, remember to do the important thing. Get out and play some games. Until next time.